Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, trying to make sense of markets, and not making any sense to me today. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and this is a special edition of the Macro Show, Kingdom Under Siege. Yes, we are under heavy siege, my friends. And for that, I will wear the crown the entire show as a sign of my faith and my stalwartness against what is. And I predicted there would be another siege. I didn't think it would be quite as big. But some of you have asked, how is it that you can stand there with all this attack on the kingdom and not worry? Because I've been through worse. I've been through a lot worse. The other thing, my macro timelines are a lot longer than most people think. So entry points are a lot further back than probably most people think. So I don't worry about, you know, the day-to-day, week-to-week, or even month-to-month. I know where this thing is going. And I think that's really important. And we'll touch on, you know, this insolvency thing a little bit, because there were some questions about that. But what is potentially driving all of this resurgence in selling of treasuries? Well, you're starting to see charts like this come back out again. This is the copper-gold ratio of Bond King Jeff Gundlach's view of where interest rates go. And you can see 10-year treasury yields are here. The copper-gold ratio is up here, suggesting that everyone believes this one is correct. And that the only direction, and it's always that way, the only direction that yields can always go is up. I mean, no one ever really thinks they can go down. It's always, let's find a relationship that says they have to go up. Meaning, based on this relationship, people think that 10-year treasury yields are headed to 1.8%? Yeah, okay. I'm not sure I believe that for a second. I mean, and after all, it's hard to believe that this is going to just magically jump up there when, courtesy of Brent Johnson of Santiago Capital, as we talked about on Monday, you have a four standard deviation event in the net speculative short position of the 30-year long bond. So here's a zero bound. And what you've seen for the last 2 years is speculators selling large contracts. These are sized out at 100,000 per contract, selling specifically 30-year. And after we look at the price chart here this week, because this data is good as every Tuesday, we can probably safely assume that the speculative selling has gone back down again. So we're already facing this massive, massive siege. And yet, you know, how is it that I could possibly just stand there and be like, hey, it's totally cool? Well, one reason is Sorcerer JP renewed the QE spell, as we expected, to the same schedule that it's always had. And there are, again, three long bond purchases. There will be six this month, just as there's always been. And there will be, even though they claim that there will taper in 2022. I don't believe them for an absolute second, but hey, they've got to say what they've got to say. So one of the things that makes sense to me is, well, the QE schedule isn't changing. We know that's important. But when we talk about insolvency, so some of you thought, well, is he talking about the federal government going broke? No. I'm talking about personal and corporate bankruptcies. That's what we're going to look at. And well, that's not what I should say look at, because there's not a lot of data on it. In fact, someone suggested, hey, Steve, why don't you go look at the Google Trends? And there I did. In fact, the highest in the last 5 years was back here in August. Now, it doesn't show that it's moving any higher or lower than its recent 12-month trend. But if this continues to pick up, well, yeah, that would indicate that there are personal bankruptcies. And of course, some people have suggested, hey, Steve, it's no big deal. The Fed can starve off insolvency events. Really? Because no, they can't. There's no possible way that they can do that. Look, let's say that you've got a mortgage, right? And you knew for a fact that in the process of QE, that your mortgage was part of an MBS that got purchased by the Fed. Let's just pretend you could know that, which you can't, but let's say you did. And you stopped making payments on your mortgage. How is your mortgage not going to default? Is Fed going to make the payments for you? Nope. And that's the point. The Fed has no power to starve off corporate and personal bankruptcies. Zero. Not possible. Can't do it. And see, the reason I can stand here and not worry day to day is because I know how the story ends. And I'm thinking about doing a whole, maybe a separate piece on insolvency events. But the recession we're in isn't going to end until we have an insolvency event where people stop paying on their loans and the system falls apart just like it did during the last two recessions. Because that's how the dollar shortage ends. We're still in a dollar shortage. The only thing we have, the only thing we've seen is people are shorting the dollar, and that's kind of made it appear that the dollar shortage isn't that bad. But the key thing is, the cycle doesn't end until there's an insolvency event. People think it's over. It's not. They think the whole thing is done and we've moved on from that. But my friends, we are far, far away from the next bull market. We're not there yet. I think closer to 2022 it begins, but we still have to have an insolvency event. Everyone thinks it was March. Oh yeah, that was insolvency and liquidity. No, it was a liquidity event, specifically a liquidity event. We have not had the insolvency event. The insolvency event has been kicked down the road by forbearances and stimulus. So the question, you know, we should be looking at is with 13 and a half million people set to lose their pandemic unemployment assistance and their emergency unemployment compensation on December 26th. That's a big deal. These people need money to pay their bills. And if at some point, if people don't have money to pay their bills, they will stop paying on their loans and the Fed will not be able to keep them out of default. The other thing you have to keep in mind is the people on regular state programs, when those end, were going on to the PUA. They're not going to be able to unless Congress renews this. Will they do it? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, but my hunch is will we struggle to get something in this year? That's my hunch. So there's more to come. You know, the insolvency event has not happened yet. When it does, it'll be ugly. Now let's take a look at the economic data. And someone asked if I'd do a special on crude this week, and we will. We'll cover crude, and I know I haven't really done a very good job of that. But we'll do it. So let's go into the economic data going back till Monday. What do we see in Japan? Manufacturing PMI. What's PMI? Purchasing Managers Index. This is a survey to the factory sector on what they see is going on. And a 50 means that half of them see growth, the other half see a decline in growth or contraction. And so it nets it out at 50, meaning there is no growth. In Japan, it came in at 49, which is not good because Japan's been stuck in this terrible economy. We can see it's never gotten back. I mean, it's ever since January, this thing has continued to contract. In fact, it was contracting before that. It was actually going back, since March, I think it was in contraction. Japan's economy, from the manufacturing standpoint, is in terrible shape. Not only no recovery, it's continued to get worse. While everyone else has started to get better, China slowly growing, 54.9. So their manufacturing sector slowly growing. Now let's move into the Wednesday data, and we'll see what we find here. Italian manufacturing, French manufacturing, pretty much 51 versus 49, pretty much unchanged between the two. Germany's probably seen the best at 57.8, showing the German manufacturing sector is in expansion. How about the broad Eurozone at 53? You know, if you look at the Eurozone in its entirety, you know, it just started getting a little expansion last month. I mean, it's pretty much, and then we have a follow-up of a small expansion this month. There's really no major improvement since the big dump during March. In fact, it's gotten worse since March and only slightly improved since then. So if you're looking for, you know, the surge and, you know, growth out of the Eurozone, you're not seeing it. It's not there at all. There's no evidence of it. Look at the, you know, CPI. Everyone, you know, worried about inflation. Well, how about Eurozone CPI? Preliminary, -0.3. Previous, -0.3. That's not inflation. That's deflation. How about Redbook same-store weekly retail sales? Now, there's a number you can get excited about. Black Friday, year-over-year rate jumped 9.2%. So, big number out of that. How about the U.S. manufacturing sector? This is the market manufacturing PMI. It showed an expansion of 56.7. Now, this is a pretty good number. But let's try to put this in context. So, it wasn't until, it looks like September, that the U.S. manufacturing sector resumed an expansion off of, it stopped, let's put it this way, it stopped contracting in January. And then it was, didn't change, I mean, stopped contracting in July, was unchanged in August, and then started a slight expansion in September, October, and now we have November, a pretty healthy number at 56. But let's put this in relative perspective. Here's industrial production. Let's zoom in. Now, we'll assume, because we don't have the November number, that this number should go up a bit. But what it's telling you is we're nowhere near where we were before. The economy is not even close to recovered, and we're seeing these pretty big PMI numbers, which suggest that maybe there's not much gas left in the tank. It's possible this may be as far as this goes, because once all these purchasing managers are bullish on things, it tends to start to slow down. So the question we have is, if we're hitting 56, and this is the best our industrial production is about to get, is whatever move higher we're likely to see in November, it tells us that we may have a bigger problem, that the economy is getting tapped out. And we look at the ISM, the more official manufacturing PMI. You know, it's showing a lot more rosier numbers the whole way through. And let's see if it'll come up with this chart, and it won't. So we will move on from that. Let's keep going. See what else we've got here. South Korea. You know what? There was something about South Korea we overlooked. And yes, exports. I remember this guy wanted to go over this. Exports in November on a year-over-year basis were up at 4%. This is a good sign. South Korea is an export country. Now, we might think that when we see a positive exporting number here, this would also lead to higher CPI. So we'll check on that. Imports still down, but not down as much, minus 2.1%. Now, let's go forward to, I think, Tuesday evening. South Korea, CPI, year-over-year basis, up from 0.1 to 0.6%. So there you see the exports led to a bit of inflation as demand for South Korean exports pushed prices up. Let's move in today's data. Producer price index out of the Eurozone, still in contraction, minus 2% versus minus 2.3% the month before. Eurozone factories exporting deflation. Mortgage applications down slightly. Most of the move down was in the refinance index. ADP non-farm payroll missed expectations of 410 and came in at 307. So you look at, you know, are we going to see a recovery in the economy? Well, payrolls are slowing down. And unfortunately, it's really hard to see in this chart, but they're slowing down. The fact they're kind of a little above where they were, their normal trend was, you know, around 200,000, and this came in at 307. Not a positive sign. So we're seeing a slowdown in ADP employment. We'll have the official one on Friday. And crude oil. So let's talk about crude. There were some questions on what's going on with crude. Well, inventories were down this week, but gasoline inventories and distillates were up. Let's look at the more detailed data. And to do that, we're going to go to the EIA website, and you can simply view the history of whichever one you want to look at. So let's start with crude oil. Where are we at inventory-wise? Well, over the last, since 1982, we're fairly near we're pretty near the highs of where it's been. And if we look at the seasonal analysis, so we go to a five-year seasonal analysis, it tells us we're kind of right in the middle in terms of where we should be in terms of inventory. But if we don't see a pickup in demand, this number can easily head back higher with renewed lockdowns and restrictions. How about the gasoline? Now, this is fairly, as you can see, wobbly. It moves up and down a lot. So we have to do some deeper digging. Boy, that'll show up in the comments, and it shows up that we are at the highest level in terms of seasonal analysis over the last 5 years for this time of the year. That's not a good sign for gasoline demand. Should have expected a drawdown with the holiday week last week, but we didn't get that. And how about distillates? Wow, this thing was at its highest, almost second highest point back here in August. It's come down some, but is that really telling us that the inventories and distillates are over and done with? No, we're from a five-year perspective on seasonal analysis, we're at the second highest level. So not good. If we don't see some demand through the end of the year, which largely we should not expect because of due to lockdowns and whatnot, these numbers can get worse. But the market's extremely bullish on crude, you know? And here's something that people don't understand is, can you have higher prices in crude? You can, but you know, when you have 13.5 million people are about to have less income, higher prices will be rejected because they won't be able to afford it. If people cannot afford higher prices will be rejected. That's true with anything. And when you look at the markets today, you see that in the bond market. Why are treasury yields up? Because speculators keep selling and bidding yields higher. They're expecting demand to come. And if demand never comes, then yields will go, where's my arrow? Down. You know, and the same is true with oil. If there isn't demand because people can't afford those prices, it would be bearish for crude oil. But yet the market is totally bulled up on crude. Now, here's something that will kind of maybe offset that crude oil bullishness. Is this is a chart that has been circling around Twitter. It says asset managers have boosted their short bets on the US dollar to record levels. So we talk about that record short position in the long bond. Well, what asset managers are doing is they're buying stocks and then they're shorting the dollar that everyone thinks is going to nothing. They're short the dollar. Now, if you see a rally in the dollar, what do you think is going to happen to crude oil prices? I'll make it really easy for you. Boom. What do you think is going to happen to treasury bond prices? Boom. What do you think is going to happen to stock prices? Oh, where's my red stock arrow? There we go. So you look at the positioning here, and what you have is asset managers buying stocks and then taking leverage risks or bets, say on the dollar, to drive stock prices higher. And when you see extreme positioning, and I don't know that I've ever seen, I couldn't have, it's a record position now. You have extreme positioning in the long bond. You have extreme positioning in the dollar. And if you're long bonds, then you're already long the dollar. They go together. In fact, I had a wonderful conversation with Colorado Travis on Twitter. Some of you know who he is, and he's a big star on there. And he's like, man, once I got what you meant, it made perfect sense. You know, the long bond and the dollar go together. So if you're long bonds, you're long the dollar. If you're long the dollar, you're long bonds. Maybe not directly between the two, but that's your thesis. And when you see this record short position in the dollar and you see this record short position in the long bond, you got to go like, wow, there's only eventually one direction bond prices and the dollar can go. Yeah, and that's going to be up. And you can see there's a massive amount of selling in the long bond, the dollar, ever since it spiked there. I mean, huge selling of the dollar. And still, where is it at? It's in its five-year trading range. In fact, let's go look at the dollar because some of you have asked to do that. I mean, everyone's calling the dollar dead here, and the reality is that's not true. I mean, you got to look at, you know, some of you look at charts that are very short term. So here's a chart of the dollar. It's in a five-year trading range. It's not even at the lowest point in 5 years. It's at maybe the second lowest point if you count this as one unit, one group. So you have record short dollar, can't get back to the shortest, to the lowest in the last 5 years from here forward. I don't know, it tells you, you know, when this market reverses, it's going to be violent, my friend, absolutely violent. What do we got next? This chart I found on Twitter as well. Looks at the S&P 500 over a 12-month forward return and the percentages off the charts, almost as high as it was during the dot-com bubble. And it looks at a composite of 12-month forward returns. Oh, wait, no, 12-month forward returns, I'm sorry, is the gray area. This is a composite index looking at euphoria and panic. Everyone's euphoric, almost as they were in the dot-com bubble. Sorry, I got that backwards. And what it says is when everybody's greedy, the forward 12-month returns of stocks is negative. You can see greed, negative, greed, negative, greed. Nope, stocks are going to go up this time. It's always that way. Everyone's overly greedy. And there's more evidence of that when we look at the put-call ratio. And you can see here the put-call ratio is extremely low. I ran it back as far as this would go, 5 years, pretty much at the lowest point in 5 years. And that tells you that everybody is bullish and think stock prices are going higher. If you look at the percentage of stocks above the 200-day moving average on the S&P 500, highest in the last 5 years, and I would imagine if I could go back further, it's even more than that. Everybody is bulled up and crammed into stocks. Let's take a look at the bond market real quick, and then we'll wrap up the show. What's going on with TLT, the opposite end of 30-year treasury yields? We see that it got down to around 1.7%. on stimulus hopes, it went down, fought its way back. But what's really important here is You look at yesterday's price action and it dipped, and under strong volume, buyers push back. You look at today, selling coming down, buyers push back. And what's interesting to me is we're seeing a lot of those computer algorithms selling in the market. We see this, you know, you can tell because it starts in the overnight and it's hard selling in the morning. Starts in the overnight, hard selling. And you see it over and over where it's these computer algorithms, and we see that net short data. So what do we see this week? Hard selling again in the pre-market hours. And see, we saw that today as well. And what you really need to know is the big players continue to buy everything when it drops under this orange line. They're gobbling it up. No matter how low it goes, they're buying, buying, buying. We've got a gap closure here. So yes, technically this is an ugly picture, but again, you have large commercial banks buying this hand over fist. Plus, you have absolutely no credit growth. You know, people think interest rates can go up when there's credit contraction. It's not how it works. Again, my friends, there's a reason we go over that credit data every Friday. Be sure to like. That's why we'll go over. Be sure to subscribe and come back and join us. We'll be back on Friday. Look at the credit data, because when you're bond bullish and you go through all the data like I have, there's really the only thing that matters is the credit data. No credit growth, bond prices going up. And if you think about it, is if yields are being driven higher right now by speculators, right, which is what we see, then I know that when they're done selling, you know, when you have the biggest selling event in the long bond, I mean, let's look at this. You have the biggest selling event in the long bond, and the best they can do is get it to 1.7% on the 30-year, the best. You know, if you look at major market reversals, now we're going on a tangent. Sorry. You want to look at major market reversals? Look when everyone sold. But market bottom here on the S&P. When everybody is selling and it's done, then prices go up. Well, guess what? If you look here, everybody's sold. It's just a matter of time before they've done and they've gotten these extreme positions and the party's over. There's not much left for them to do. And that is how I can remain super bullish, because the insolvency event's not here yet. Maybe it's starting to happen. I don't know, but it hasn't happened. All these people are going to get squeezed out. Bond prices are going up. Yields are going to zero. And the kingdom will stand, my friends, and you'll be here to see it. Thanks for watching. I'll see you Friday. We'll take a look at the credit data and whatever else we got coming. And I'll look forward to seeing you then. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. This video is not to be construed as recognition or solicitation by selling security, financial instrument, or to participate in a particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter, or a person capacity has been expressed via that. Do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc., or Steve Van Meter Financial.